Midwife Independence Day, getting a national nurse, home birth intervention rates, and we're going to take a look at patient communication skills. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jimmy Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the program this week. I'm here in the studio getting ready to get this show out on the road for you. And in order to do that, I need to remind all of you of a few things. First of all, make sure you head over and check out everything available for you over at nursingshow.com. Of course, you've probably, if you've been there recently, have noticed that I'm actually putting up a video segment of the show, and you may be watching one of those video segments right now. If not, you should definitely head over and check those things out. We've got a lot of exciting things happening with our parent network, the ProMed network, and a lot of our programs are now available over a set-top box. You can actually watch The Nursing Show in your own living room with a internet-connected TV or an internet-connected set-top box, and that's very exciting. I'm looking forward to expanding that program. So you can find all of that over at nursingshow.com. Sign up for the newsletter while you're over there. You can also get in touch with me directly by sending an email in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from the listeners, and it's important for you to contact me when you have a suggestion, a comment on a show, perhaps a correction that needs to be made. Whatever the case may be, I really enjoy hearing from each and every one of you. So send those emails in here to nursingshow@gmail.com. You can always leave a comment over on the site. And in any case, definitely follow up and share The Nursing Show with your friends. It's a great way to let other folks know about the great programming available in podcasts like The Nursing Show, whatever their interests may be. Of course, your fellow nurses should be watching The Nursing Show. And if they are looking for other interesting healthcare-related content, they can find other nursing-related programs over at the ProMed Network, promednetwork.com, and all of those resources are available and easy to find right off the front page of The Nursing Show. So I want to thank everybody for checking in with the show this week, and let's jump on in here in just a sec. We'll jump on into this week's news items and then follow up with our tip of the week. Let's move on into this week's news, and I'll start off with a story I picked up out of medicalnewstoday.com coming from New York State. And earlier this month, the state of New York assembly or legislature approved a Midwife Independence Act, hence Midwife Independence Day, basically allowing nurse midwives to act independently of agreements with hospitals or obstetricians. While, of course, many organizations, physician groups and obstetricians and gynecological organizations opposed this ruling, it was found that it really helped rural nurse midwives to connect with their patients and be able to operate and practice safely and legally. Unfortunately, they were unable in many cases to find obstetricians or hospitals that were willing to sign agreements to provide the necessary backing and oversight that the previous legal requirements had in place. So the nurses now will be able to act completely independently and provide a planned home birth environment safely and in legal compliance in the state of New York. And there are several other similar initiatives in place around the country and in many places. Of course, much of the country has a situation set up where planned home births by a nurse midwife are not legal at all, that the state's organizations and the nurse practice acts have set it so that these nurses cannot act independently or in some cases act at all, even under other guidance, in a planned home birth setting. It's a hot button issue. I know whenever I raise any of these topics with nurse midwives, in the news headline, we end up getting a lot of feedback, and I welcome that feedback. I really want to hear back from you. I know quite a few nurse midwives and leaders in the nurse midwife community listen to the show. We just had a recent discussion over at the Insights in Nursing podcast, one of the other programs I host, where we have a panel discussion, and we talked about poor meta-analysis and research and how it affects the perceptions of the safety and efficacy of things like planned home birth. And we had Amy Romano on, who is the blogger over at Science and Sensibility, and she was able to talk a little bit about some of the flawed research studies that have come along and are supported by members of some aspects of the medical community to discount the efficacy and safety of home-based birth. So something to keep in mind, but it is a move forward in the state of New York. And I think that the advantage of this ultimately, especially in rural areas and in hard to serve populations, underserved populations, as it were, there are going to be better access to prenatal care for those communities because they're going to have access to nurse midwives to help them plan and ultimately have their children at home in a much more relaxed and natural environment. So I look forward to hearing any comments you might have on this. Maybe let me know where your states stand on this issue. Again, you can always reach me, nursingshow@gmail.com, or you can go ahead and leave a comment right on the show notes for this episode. You'll find the show notes link at the top of the page at nursingshow.com. Let's move along to the next item here in the news. And this is not necessarily a news article, but I think an important item that related to an ongoing discussion in the news and current events for nursing. There was a recent post by my good friend Kim McAllister over at the Emergent blog that you can find that at emergentblog.com. Kim was sending an open letter to the ANA, the American Nurses Association, asking them why they weren't supporting the naming of the senior nurse in the Health and Human Services Department as the national nurse for the United States, creating a position that really already exists, according to Kim's argument. You know, we don't have a national nurse in this country. Other places do. Australia does. And there should be someone who is recognized as the senior nurse leader in our country. We have a senior nurse or a high-level nurse that is the highest nurse in the Health and Human Services Department of the U.S. Public Health Service. But what about the national nurse, a real person, an office and a title associated with that? Kim has a great article on this. I'll have a link in the show notes. I urge you to check it out. Kim really draws some interesting points. And then just to let you know, she talks about the ANA definition of nursing. Now, I've covered this here on the show before. Nursing is the protection, promotion, and optimization of health and abilities, prevention of illness and injury, etc. She points out that these are the very foundation of the National Nurse Act that is being brought up in Congress, and she wonders why the ANA is standing against this particular piece of legislation. You know, I'd kind of like to know myself, what is it they have against the naming of a national nurse? I think I need to look in more carefully at this legislation, but you can find the links to both the legislation and to some interesting information from the ANA over at Kim's site, emergentblog.com, and I'll have a link to this specific article over there in the show notes for this particular episode. Finally, another quick look at home-based births. And this is a study that recently came out that a lot of people had been quoting earlier in the month. And it was looking at the fact that while it was claiming that there were fewer interventions affecting the mother in a planned home birth, it was also stating that it was not as safe for the infants, that the infant mortality rate for the newborns was higher. This was the study that was brought up in a recent Insights in Nursing episode where we had Amy Romano on from the Science and Sensibility blog to talk to us about reading science effectively and understanding methodology. And she pointed out some major flaws in this particular study. It is a combined meta-analysis study where several different research pieces are put together and analyzed as a group. And of course, that is meant to alleviate issues with the the study of small patient populations in a lot of research in medical and nursing field. However, if you pull a giant study, such as this one did, and pull it with a bunch of other smaller studies, you can really end up with skewed numbers. And if you have a large, well-designed study, you don't need to provide a meta-analysis of multiple studies because you have a large patient population study involved. You can look at the numbers there in that study and extrapolate appropriately. Then when you use different criteria from different studies and don't boil down to a similar criteria point, such as when is neonatal mortality measured? At 7 days? At 30 days? Well, if you have a study that measures neonatal mortality all the way out to 30 days, infants past a certain point, is it really related to a birth trauma or related to a birth-related problem? So obviously, there can be a lot of issues when you start combining studies that are using different criteria for examining their data. So I just wanted to point out this article that has been talked about quite a bit, and yet there's a lot of issues with it. And I'll actually also provide a link back to the Insights in Nursing episode so you can listen to Amy's great analysis of this study and her confusion about why this is used as a better representation of infant mortality rates in planned home birth when there have been other at least one other really well-designed study that stands on its own and doesn't need to be combined in a meta-analysis situation. Research can boggle many of us, and we often don't read the information appropriately. So we just kind of read the author's conclusions and assume that their methodology is good. I think that it is incumbent upon us as nurses to be able to critically read some of this research and understand what's going on there so that we can provide correct information when people ask us about that latest headline they heard about, that maybe it's not safe to have a home birth. And this can be medical professionals asking this question as well as the lay public. So I urge you to really follow up and stay on top of the research as it comes out. I'll try to do my best to talk a little bit about the research itself and tell you what's coming along, but it is incumbent upon you to follow up on these articles. And if you have a different point of view, if you think there's a problem with that research, get back in touch with me. Again, always, you can leave a comment on the website in the show notes for this episode, and you can also reach me, of course, by sending an email into nursingshow@gmail.com. Let's jump on into this week's tip of the week now, and I will lead off with this particular tip of the week because I think it's important for us to revisit some basic communication skills and theory and concepts from time to time. And so this week we'll be talking about patient communication here on this week's tip of the week. So what are we talking about when we discuss patient communication? Well, one of the things we want to do is we'll talk about the definition of patient communication. We'll look at the communication theory, just kind of a brief review, because there's some important concepts associated with good and effective communication skills, and we want to understand that there are some important pieces of that puzzle. We'll also talk about some of the variables affecting how good we are, how effective our communication is, and we'll also look at interpreting communication and some of the things we need to keep in mind when receiving that message from someone else during a communication process. So let's jump on in first off and talk about what are we talking about when we discuss patient communication. Well, I can read it right here. The therapeutic two-way transmission of information between a patient and a caregiver. If we're talking about patient communication, it is a two-way street and it should be therapeutic. It's different from social forms of communication. You would interact differently with a patient than you might with someone when you're out at a club somewhere or at a party or talking to your kids. It is different. And so we need to keep some things in mind about how we present ourselves and how we present information depending on what's going on with the patient. We also need to remember that when we engage in communication with a patient in such a way that it is non-therapeutic, whether we are using poor body language, whether we are using big words. There's a lot of things we can do to speak over a patient's head or appear as if we don't care about that patient, appear distracted. All of those things can make that communication non-therapeutic. And you should understand that you make it difficult for the next person to come in and contact and interact with that patient by having that situation crop up. So keep this in mind and make sure that you are using good communication skills when you're talking to these patients. A little bit of communication theory. There are pieces of this puzzle, the pieces of communication that have to happen for effective communication to occur. You have to have a sender, and that can be both the nurse and the patient. Remember, communication can happen two ways, and in fact, we want it most often to happen two ways because we want to get some feedback on the effectiveness of any teaching or education or questions we're asking. There has to be a receiver, and again, both nurse and the patient. There needs to be a message imparted, and that message can go in a couple of different ways. We may think about verbal communication, but we may have written communication, handing patients discharge orders, prescriptions with information on how to take a medication, or we may also have nonverbal forms of communication, our posture and the way in which we're interacting, making eye contact, etc. All of those are forms of communication and part of the message. There will be feedback associated with how that message is received. And that feedback also may be verbal or nonverbal. And so we should make sure that we're aware that in addition to the message itself, there'll be kind of a counter message coming back. And finally, what is the context in which that message occurs? And these are some of the things that you can work to control as far as environmental issues. The context is really related to things that might cause a distraction or the tone of the overall conversation. Are there other people present? Privacy issues. All of these are part of that overall context in which the communication happens. And by being aware of these five topics here, these five parts of communication, you can be more effective in the way that you communicate with someone else. You just by being more aware of the different things that go into being more effective in communication. So let's talk about the pieces of the puzzle here, and I'm going to have them here on the screen. You can look at the pieces of the puzzle being effective communication consisting of these things: presence, listening, perception, caring and disclosure, acceptance, empathy, authenticity, and respect. These are all parts of effective communication, and therefore, because they're parts of effective communication, they are really parts of therapeutic communication. You really need to have a presence and a listening skill. Part of communication is silence, and that silence can be encouraging for someone else to open up. You can use that skill very effectively. Perception. What is the person thinking about the way you're approaching them? What is their perception of an issue at hand? What is your perception of the patient's understanding? Caring and disclosure. You need to have an attitude of caring about what this person is telling you. If you're just asking a list of questions off a medical questionnaire, getting a general history for that patient, and you don't show some interest in what they're telling you, they may not open up and share the really meaty information that you're trying to get to. So again, you need to appear to be caring, and you need to give disclosure of what's going on and share information. So again, acceptance, empathy, authenticity, and respect all are, again, part of this process. And you should consider how important it is to show that you respect the patient, show that you are authentic in your concern. We don't just say we care about our patients. We're supposed to actually care about our patients. And sometimes that's hard to do. Sometimes we are annoyed with our patients. Sometimes there's something going on that is distracting us from caring for our patients. Whatever the case may be, when you're communicating with your patients, you need to put all that aside and really move forward authentically in dealing with whatever the issue is at hand. What are some of the variables we look at with communication? Well, some of these things are variables are things that are going to adjust how we communicate. They may get in the way of how we communicate, and you should be aware of them. First off, culture. People are from different places, and this can be even in the case of different parts of the same town. Educational level, all those things can be part of it. The developmental level of the patient. You may have an adult patient, but an adult patient who developmentally is slower, and that person is going to need to be have things presented to them in such a way that they can understand it. So again, developmental issues are important. Individual perceptions. What is this person, you know, you tell somebody they have cancer, most people just assume they're going to die. And yet that's not often the case in some cancers. And we need to find out what their perception level is and then adjust those perceptions if we can through effective communication. And so these can all be variables in how we present information effectively. There may be relationships, pre-existing relationships between the parties. If you're in a small community and you know the person socially, it can provide a barrier to talking to the individual. If you've been kind of dealing with this patient who is not listening to you and is doing things that you'd rather they didn't do with regard to their part of their healthcare plan, you may have a pre-existing relationship with this patient by the time that comes for you to give them discharge orders and instructions and education. That relationship needs to be considered as part of the variables affecting communication. Purpose and the content of the message, all part of these variables. You need to lay out why they need to know these things. Why is it important that they know how to recognize an allergic reaction because they are taking a new antibiotic that they've never taken before and they're going to go home and that allergic reaction may not show up for a day. You need to let them know why that's important to know and why it's important for them to keep these papers handy to call back if there's a problem. All of that is kind of the why. You need to tell people the why. Also, the length and the timing. Based on people's attention spans, their age and developmental levels, you may need to present appropriately within a certain time frame. You may want to time your approach to that patient related to when they're taking their pain meds so that they are not completely snowed when you come in and talk to them, and they're not going to remember anything you tell them if you just gave them their pain meds. So you need to plan the timing appropriately. Timing may also be related to when a family member is there to help ask questions and help remember instructions. So again, all of these things are part of length and timing and how you set up and present your message. Some final thoughts on interpreting communication effectively. Answer questions during the communication process. It's really important for you to make sure you're asking questions and also asking them if they have any questions. It's important to evaluate the response to your message. This is that feedback portion, that two-way street. It's very important for you to make sure that you leave places in your communication message, in your education, in your teaching, that you give the patient an opportunity to communicate back to you their understanding and any questions they might have. So what is meant? What is known by this particular patient? What do they understand? These are all things that you can use to find out their preconceived notions, their perceptions about a problem, as well as their understanding of what you've imparted to them. What is missing? You can also look for nonverbal cues, and I call these the three P's. You may not see this anywhere else. This is something I kind of came up with to help me remember, but we're talking about a position, posture, and proximity, the three Q's of nonverbal communication. Posture, is the person sitting upright? Are you sitting upright and maybe leaning slightly forward to show interest? Positioning, where are you standing? Are you paying attention to them? Are you making eye contact with them? Are you standing in a position where they have to crane their head up to look up at you? Or have you positioned yourself in such a way that you are at their level? That's very important, especially with children, to get down so that they aren't perceiving you as the giant in the room. That happens to me quite a bit at 6'4". I tend to be the giant to a lot of people in the room. Get down to their level. And proximity. You know, a hand on the shoulder or just a gentle hand on the wrist, not condescending, but to show caring and to just provide that therapeutic touch along with our discussion of concepts with them and helping them to understand. All can be part of our nonverbal cues in communication. And of course, you can look at position, posture, and proximity with relation to how the patient is presenting themselves in body language to you. There's a lot of good resources on communications in nursing and patient care. I've got a couple of them listed in the show notes for this episode, and I urge you to follow up on those links and learn more about effective patient communication as it relates to taking care of patients in your scope of practice. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind all of you, you can find links to everything discussed, all the news items, as well as additional resource links for this week's tip of the week, all available over at nursingshow.com. If you haven't already checked out the site, you should definitely head over there and check it out. I put up additional article segments throughout the course of the week. You can leave a comment on one of the articles there and let me know what you think of what's been said in that article. Anytime you leave a comment, it shoots me an email, so it's a great way to start a discussion with me and with the other readers and listeners at The Nursing Show. You can also find a way to sign up for The Nursing Show newsletter, and you'll find links to The Nursing Show fan page at Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/nursingshow, click the like button at the top of the page, become a fan of The Nursing Show on Facebook. We're pushing 500 fans there. I'd really like to get to 500 fans here in the next week or so, and you can do that. Just go ahead and click that like button at the top of the page, and you can become a fan of The Nursing Show, facebook.com/nursingshow. I'll close out the show with some great PodSafe music, a new band to The Nursing Show called Rin. If you haven't checked out their music, you should definitely follow up on the link in the show notes for this band and any of the other bands in the show notes episodes. Find out what's going on with these great independent music artists who make their songs available to us here on The Nursing Show and other great podcasts. And support them with purchasing a song now and again. You know, spend $1.29. It's less than the cost of a bottle of soda or a bottled water, and you can provide the impetus for them to continue to create great music. So I urge you to support these artists. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. I'll be back again next week with another episode of The Nursing Show, ready for you every Friday to take you into your weekend. In the meantime, I will remind you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Beat of a heart soon knees fall to the floor. The fears long concealed come to life. The tears long restrained find their storm. Waiting for the cold to let us live. Waiting for the dawn to break. We'll time when we knew the world, cause we need to feel again. So don't fall and break, you don't know which way to turn, cause we'll find a way through. A room without a sound.